Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
How much has the war in Ukraine changed Europe? Well, I've come upon words like unthinkable, inconceivable, transformation when it comes to security, energy, and politics. European countries are now working to wean themselves off Russian energy. They're taking in millions of refugees and boosting military spending, all once again unthinkable before this war. We have two NPR correspondents in Europe joining us. Eleanor Beardsley is in Paris. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, Scott.
And Frank Langfitt is traveling in Moldova in Eastern Europe, just next to Ukraine. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Scott.
First, a broad question to both of you. From where you are, Eleanor first, how has this war changed Europe?
Well, I'm about as far as you can get from this war in Europe. I'm in Paris, which is very far to the west. It's completely changing Europe, even here. You know, I've been in Paris 18 years, and one of the themes that I've heard over and over again is how the European Union ended the war between France and Germany and brought the European continent together, and we've had peace for 70 years, and it's just touted over and over again. And I think Europeans are absolutely shocked to their cores that there's this World War II style war on their continent. I was out at dinner last night in Paris. It's all anyone can talk about is this war. People don't feel safe. They don't feel settled. This is nothing short of a new world order that's happening right now. Europe will change completely. President Emmanuel Macron has already said it. It's already changed decades of German military foreign policy doctrine. Yeah. They did not export, you know, weapons. They're now sending weapons to Ukraine. Their energy policy, they've stopped Nord Stream 2. I would be surprised if it saw the light of day before decades.
Oh, that gas pipeline, yes, from Russia.
The gas pipeline from Russia, exactly. They were depending on energy from Russia. People are watching Zelensky speak to parliaments across Europe. He spoke to the French parliament this week. He named a few French companies who are still operating in Russia. Literally less than an hour after he spoke, Renault Car, the car manufacturer, pulled out of Russia.
Frank, same question to you. If you went to that same kind of dinner in Moldova that Eleanor has gone to, what would you hear?
I think, you know, on the 22nd of February, people felt that they were secure in Europe, particularly here in Eastern Europe, or relatively secure. They were worried, but there was not a major military threat on the continent. Well, clearly that's not the case anymore. And that's just a fundamental change. And so you now have to rethink, first of all, is NATO working correctly? Is the European Union working? It's a peace project that came, you know, essentially out of the ashes of World War II. Where I am in Moldova, the thought is, well, we've been neutral all this time to avoid this, and now we have a war right over the border so close that we can hear the missiles landing. And so you have a lot of people wondering, what do we do next to make ourselves feel safer? And I think that's a question you're seeing up and down the eastern flank of NATO and in neutral, even far more vulnerable countries like Moldova. You know, one of the things that you've seen with NATO member states as well as the European Union, which they've never done this before, is massive weapon shipments coming out of the eastern flank of NATO countries across the border into Ukraine to basically rearm the Ukrainians who are going through this material very quickly. I was talking to Peter Bator, he's the Slovakian ambassador to NATO, and he says there is concern, naturally, that the Russians could take action against these arms shipments as they threaten to do.
The danger that there would be attacks close to our border or that they would attack the supply lines is really high.
And, you know, when you talk to people beyond simply the military threat, they feel that this is a much greater threat to, you know, the architecture of Europe in terms of security and also sort of the culture and beliefs and frankly, value system. And this is, again, from Peter Bator. He's the Slovakian ambassador to NATO.
This is not the only European conflict. This is a direct threat to the values and principles that, by the way, NATO and the whole Euro-Atlantic alliance is built on. So this is not only attack on Ukraine. This is attack against, you know, Slovakia, against the United States, against Germany, against the values and how we live and how we see the world. So it's, you know, it's not that distant as it may seem.
Well, Eleanor, can I put that observation to you as far as the conversation in France as far as this being a direct threat to European values and principles? Where is that conversation in your circles?
Well, absolutely. People consider it a direct threat to the family of European values. They say that Ukraine is fighting for European values. There was definitely in Western Europe, in France and Germany, you know, a Russophile camp, people who were friendly to Russia and said we did not treat Russia well in the 90s. The West dismissed it, and we should have sympathy for the Russians. And there's always been talk of Macron talk about having a reset with Russia and President Putin. But I think what this war has done is eliminated any, you know, sort of friendly feelings for Russia. And we've actually seen that Russian values are not European values. And we've seen Ukraine fighting for European values. You know, these are liberal, open Western societies where you have free speech. You know, Putin, Zelensky, this is black and white now, and very clear to people here in Western Europe.
Eleanor, let me ask you about energy, right? France produces a lot of nuclear energy. Germany has been swearing off of it ever since the tsunami and damage to Fukushima in Japan. That's 11 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Has the nuclear energy conversation in Europe fundamentally changed?
Yes, I would say yes. You know, after Fukushima, many countries stepped back on nuclear. Even France was going to decrease 30% of its reliance on nuclear. France gets 70% of its energy met by nuclear power. Nuclear is back in France, and it's back in many countries in Europe. France is going to be building more nuclear reactors because of global warming, which is seen as a more immediate threat than a nuclear accident. And now you have the war in Ukraine, which puts Germany in a very bad spot because, as you said, Germany has stopped nuclear, and now it's stopped the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which wasn't working yet, but it's going to have to, you know, wean itself from Russian gas. It's a huge moment of how people are going to get energy. And I think it all points to the fact that we need clean, renewable energy in the future, which will help energy independence. We won't be dependent on funding people's wars. It's just the way we need to go, but we're decades from there.
I'm really interested in what Eleanor's just saying. I had a conversation yesterday with a top official dealing with energy here. And I said, you know, what would you ask the West to do? And he said, basically, get as much energy out of the ground as possible because high prices. And here in Moldova, it is very, very difficult because of the reliance on Russian energy. I was talking to another official, Andrei Popov. He's in charge of European integration at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And this is what he told me.
We feel ourselves very exposed, very vulnerable on many levels. We get 100% of our gas supplies from Russia. Plus, we get about 75% of our electrical energy coming from a Transnistria, Russia-owned energy plant. So this gives Russia a very strong leverage. And should this be interrupted, we'll be in a very difficult situation.
And he's referring to Transnistria. This is effectively a Russian-controlled area, a part of Moldova, a separatist region where we were right on the edge of it yesterday, where there's over 1,500 Russian troops. And so the concern here is with this war on the border, Moldova feeling very vulnerable because of the pressure that it could come under from Russia.
And let me ask you about political change, Frank. You've been describing Moldova next door to Ukraine. It has these Russian separatists on the eastern side of the country. How has this all changed the political landscape there?
I was talking to the Speaker of the Parliament just a couple days ago, who's effectively saying this security apparatus, you know, NATO, the EU, of which Moldova is not a part, it's a neutral country, this just isn't really working. I mean, you know, they really felt threatened early on in the war when the missiles were striking, which they could hear, you know, on the other side of the border. There were people that were really afraid that the war could come here. And it's receded because the Ukrainians have done quite well on the battlefield and the Russians have done so poorly. But it pointed out that the system here right now for many people just doesn't seem secure. But it is a divided country. So there are a lot of people who are very pro-Russian who see it very differently, who actually, you know, I was just talking to some people in a town where I am, a very pro-Russian area, and they were saying, no, we support Russia because Russia is attacking the Nazis in Kyiv and in the government in Ukraine. And so they completely believe what they see on Russian television, which is, you know, there's a lot of Russian television here. And so I can tell you that Vladimir Putin in parts of Moldova, the part I'm in as we speak, is absolutely winning the information war here.
Yeah. And finally, Eleanor, you're following the election in France. How has this potentially upended politics there?
Oh, it's completely hijacked the French election. There's no discussion of French issues, the economy, you know, radical Islam, French identity, things that, you know, people were talking about before. It's all about the war to the benefit of incumbent President Emmanuel Macron. You know, he speaks with world leaders. He speaks with Putin. He speaks with Zelensky. And here's what Corinne Meloul, she's a professor of international relations at Sciences Po University, told me.
He's the war chief right now, the chef de guerre. And during a war, you don't want to change leaders. So that even if before the war, his re-election was almost seen as a foregone conclusion, now it's a certainty.
We have a first round of the French presidential election on April 10th. That's less than 2 weeks away. But it's a non-event because people are sure that Emmanuel Macron is going to be re-elected.
That's NPR's Eleanor Beardsley in Paris, and we also have been talking to Frank Langfitt reporting in Moldova. Thanks to you both.
Great to talk,
Scott. Thank you,
Scott.